Well, welcome to Winter Temperatures, Gallatin Valley, and online listeners, if you're local anyway, at least for this weekend. But come the new year, if the forecast holds true, we'll be back into the 40s for temperatures. So no matter the temperature, it's time for Desert Oracle Radio Replay. And you are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio 95.9 FM, and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm your host, Roxana. To honor this turning time on our calendars, let's open today with an episode from December 18th, 2020. Nature finds a way. May it ever be so. Here is A Million Scorched Joshua Trees.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. And it sure is nice to be out in the great Mojave Wilderness when it happens. Why, just the other night, I was standing out on Route 66, running through Mojave Trails National Monument and Roy's and Amboy. You know the place, the big old neon sign that says Roy's. That's how you know. And the antique but functioning gas station and the spooky old motel and the whole beautiful scene. I had spent the day up in the preserve, a rare day out in that eastern Mojave wilderness, because work has kept me in the western Mojave. Work and the Rona. The eastern Mojave is so very different than the Joshua Tree side of that same desert in so many ways. Just the scale of the place out in the preserve. The dune sea rising up to the west, surrounded by mountain ranges, the New York Mountains, the Providence Mountains. All seemingly close enough to touch in that clear sky, that clear air. But it's all days of walking away from you. I've never seen anything like it in my life except right there, and it's my favorite place in the world. Of course, the big fire did a lot of long-term damage up on SEMA Dome, but friends, I am here to report that most of that immense, protected, dense forest of Joshua trees is just as you left them, right where you left them last time you were there. A lot of them, anyway. Won't try to pull your leg about it. The burn area is big. They say a million Joshua trees burned, and how do you even process that number? How do you even get to that number? Well, there's a guy who counts them. Lockdown Willie, they call him. On a quiet night, you can almost hear him out there counting. 107. 108, 108. And then he gets confused and you'll hear him cursing all the gods and devils because it was 108 or it was 180 and now he's got to start all over again. But when you're out there processing the enormity of the scorched landscape, the blackened trunks, the ashen ground, the eerie dead white centers of the Joshua trees, beneath and within the charred black husk, you also become aware of the many survivors even in the burn area. A pencil cholla will be standing green and proud with devastation all around it. One side of a Mojave yucca will be dead and colorless, the other side vibrant. Not even the curling white hairs on the yucca stalks singed by the inferno. There are Joshua trees that seem completely fine, surrounded by total carnage. And some of the charred trunks will still have green-topped limbs. And as I say too much, but I want to really lodge it in your head, if you leave the burn plants alone, if you just leave them be, at least some of them will cling to life and slowly put up some new stalks, green shoots, as they say on Wall Street. Because the root crown is under the seemingly dead trunk. Don't move them. Don't clean up. Even if they're dead forever, the dry desert soil needs that organic matter. The bugs and the birds, the scorpions and the centipedes, they need the shelter. They need those charred logs and twisted branches. You see it up there in Pioneer Town, especially Beverly Hills of the Desert, where all the dum-dums scraped away the alleged waste from the big fires of a dozen odd years ago. Those places are weed pits now, nothing but ugly yellow weeds in the winter. And big piles of Joshua tree skeletons still piled up here and there, dead, dead, dead. But if you look up in the Pioneer Town Preserve, you'll find yuccas and Joshua trees and cactus growing up from the old roasted limbs and trunks that were left alone, left on the ground. Up in the preserve, the field biologists will be out in force. Not that you'll see them in the great grand expanse of Mojave National Preserve, planting seeds, planting seedlings, helping the native flora recover so the invasive weeds don't take over. We got work to do long years ahead. But it's good, honest work. We've got to stabilize the climate here on Earth, home sweet home. We got to protect all the wilderness that remains and reclaim a lot that has been somewhat lost. A couple of decades ago, if you said we need to keep 50% of the Earth's surface as public conservation lands, why, Ronald Reagan would send the death squads after you, like he did in Central America or Compton. But now it's mainstream. Thanks, St. Minerva, for that. California's committed to 30%. And 63% of people tell the pollsters they're in favor of such policies nationwide, worldwide. That's a start. Imagine living in a world where half the land was protected, natural, full of native plants and animals, all there for you to wander and explore and get lost in. Clean, wild rivers for fishing. Well, it's on the way. Help out if you can. So it was good to get out of town, get away from the hustle and the bustle of Joshua Tree. You know, we had a naked guy scratching at people's sliding glass doors up in Landers the other night. And he was just going house to house. Like the UPS driver, but no presence. No uniform. No truck. No clothes at all. Just a lunatic. Watch out for that guy. I predict a big future. Maybe he'll be our next congressman. Oh, and then we had the senior vigilantes nearly killed some tourists up in Pioneer Town, tried to run them down with their golf cart because they saw somebody smiling. Well, that's more hassle and more excitement than anybody needs. So besides being out in the beautiful eastern Mojave, I spent some time in Amboy, Population 4. And the kind people at Roy's spent some time just walking around with me, just talking about the mysteries and the histories of the place. Histories, mysteries. Out in the beautiful winter sunshine on the Mother Road. It has been another busy week of book promotion, despite the brief escape to the eastern Mojave, and I thank you for your patience as we have to do promotional things. Thanks for ordering the book, picking it up from your local bookseller. I know it's out of stock and sold out here and there, and of course a lot of places are closed up in the high desert because of the you-know-what. But if you need a copy for Christmas, for solstice, for you or your desert rat loved ones, the Big A's still got the stuff, and they do deliver quickly. Try your local first, of course. Even your local Barnes & Noble is paying wages to some people in your community. So I'm thankful for locally owned bookshops. I'm talking about booksellers like Space Cowboy and Joshua Tree, Point Reyes Books, Skylight Books in L.A., McNally Jackson in New York City, Windmill City Super Number 1 in Palm Springs. May Saint Minerva bless them all. May she bless you and keep you. Keep you in business, especially. A lot of us have gone through some real hard times this year, but you know there's more to the human experience than sitting on your back end binge watching some entertainment product made by a focus group at a phone company. The only thing normal about life is that it's brief and uncertain, and it's the only chance we get. until the next time around, when you might come back as a centipede or something. Something pure. If it sounds like we're wrapping things up for the year, saying goodbye, well, that's not the case. In fact, we've got a real good Christmas program coming for you next week. You know how I love to do the annual Christmas program. And I hope you have a fire going and the cast iron stove and weird rodents coming down the chimney with care. And don't forget the great conjunction on winter solstice coming right up Monday, December the 21st. They're almost touching. Jupiter and Saturn in the southwest sky. For the first time in 800 years. I sure do hope it's a portent of good news for a change. Wouldn't that be something? Last time it came around, it announced the Black Death. Maybe this time we'll get some life. Maybe this time we'll get some of that Age of Aquarius. Let's give thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver for leaving our stockings full of these soundscapes that you hear on Desert Oracle Radio.
Hundreds of thousands of foreign-born people learn the language and customs of their adopted country. In hundreds of cities, the WORKS program safeguards the health of many thousands of normal children of preschool age. In nursery schools, the children of needy and working mothers are provided with the best of care and medical supervision. Many of its victims are prevented by poverty, isolation, or infirmity from receiving medical attention. To these people come visiting nurses to examine suspected cases and provision has been made for transportation to free clinics. With this assistance, medical science has found it possible to control a disease which is a menace to young and old alike, in many cases affecting every member of a large family. Part-time employment is provided in many kitchens where clean, wholesome school lunches are prepared for undernourished children of needy families. Many American museums have long been in need of highly skilled experts to restore valuable historical materials. Fossils and animal skeletons are being prepared and mounted for study. One of the outstanding cultural achievements of the Works program is the Federal Theater. For many years, vast sections of our country have not seen a flesh and blood theatrical performance. To these areas, the WPA has brought a new type of entertainment, and at the same time, enriched the art of the theater in metropolitan centers. Federal Theater presentations are of many types. Puppet shows such as this for the children, open-air variety shows playing in parks, musical comedies, and others. Here are excerpts from three of the most popular Federal Theater presentations. The Federal Theater production of Sinclair Lewis drama, It Can't Happen Here.
Oh, they're having a book burner on the green tomorrow night.
A what?
Gonna burn up all this subversive literature. A lot of smutty stuff that's corrupting public morals. Have you got any objections?
Well, you won't find any subversive books here.
Oh. Now, how about this fella? Now, this fella, Charles Dickens, wasn't he a communist?
And Macbeth.
Hang on, Macduff. That man be he who first cries, hold enough.
Inevitably comes disaster, as it has through all the ages of history. So today, flood, fire, and famine relentlessly persecute the human race. In this land of ours, so bountifully supplied by nature with fertile lands and rich forests, disaster has taken a terrible toll. But in the moment of greatest need, the shock troops of disaster go into action with a courage and perseverance which armed our forefathers against despair. The shock troops of disaster, the great army of WPA workers diverted from their work of construction and improvement to meet a pressing emergency, have proven their merit through many tragic hours which have harried up far-flung areas of the nation. Working hand in hand with other agencies of relief, the men and women of the WPA take up the work of rescue, evacuation, and relief. Food is distributed to victims from outdoor kitchens, and carloads of warm clothes and bedding are rushed to shivering refugees from WPA sewing rooms in many states. In emergency hospitals, thousands of lives are saved by Red Cross and volunteer nurses and doctors assisted by trained WPA workers. For hundreds of miles along the flood area, the WPA supplies the shock troops that hold the river within man-made walls. Levee workers transport material by hand, by truck, by boat. Working day and night, they fill countless thousands of sandbags, raising the levees above the record crest. Often working under the skilled direction of Army engineers, relief workers fight the flood at every point. People will not soon forget the courage of these heroic workers, for Administrator Harry Hopkins heard their praise along the full route of his inspection trip as head of the President's Committee. In the drought which has afflicted thousands of square miles of our western plains, ruin and famine come in the wake of the hot, dry winds which tear the rich soil from the grass roots. Here again, the shock troops of disaster marshal their forces against devastation. Dust, once the valuable topsoil of the farm country, is now carried in whirling clouds, choking and blinding people and livestock, rolling on higher, wider, and blacker until the land itself, upon which everything else depends, the land it took nature 100 years to the inch to build up, is blowing away. There is great immediate danger from inflammation of eyes, throats, and lungs tortured by dust. Expert clinical care for children and adults is provided to minimize the danger to life and health. Thus, the Works program answers the need of both the individual and the community. With drought comes the added peril of fire, an ever-present danger to lives and property in forest-covered regions. It requires only the spark of a cigarette or a flash of lightning to bring about devastation and ruin. Parks, playgrounds, and other recreation areas play an increasingly important part in the lives of our people. The construction, improvement, and maintenance of thousands of such centers under the Works Program provides millions of people with healthful, pleasant surroundings for relaxation and play. In regions of congested population, the WPA has cooperated with national and state park agencies in the improvement of recreational areas easily accessible to countless thousands of men, women, and children forced to play in the streets during the oppressive heat of summers with well-equipped bathhouses. A new idea in bringing happiness to underprivileged children, and the youngsters are allowed to borrow one at a time. And it is our responsibility to assist them in becoming underprivileged children and the valor of the nation's pioneers. The background for Abraham Lincoln's early life. Under this program, Work Pays America.
Amboy to Zizix and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from our home base in Joshua Tree on KCDZ 107.7 FM, Friday nights from 10 to 11 p.m. That's because the good people at Z107.7 run a bonus episode at 10:30 p.m. And that means a full hour of nighttime audio enjoyment. You can also hear us on Valley 104.9 in the Snoqualmie Valley, Washington State. Don't forget to stop at Tweed's in North Bend for a slice of cherry pie. And in the Central Valley out of Fresno, you can hear Desert Oracle Radio on KFCF 88.1 FM, Pacifica Radio for the Central Valley. Tuesday and I believe Thursday afternoons at 2:30 and 3 p.m. And don't forget Lookout FM in Hollywood and Burbank. I don't know what time we're on there, middle of the night, whenever you need us. And wherever you need us, we're on your podcast player. Just tell your device to play Desert Oracle Radio. As we're coming up on the end of the year, I want to thank Megan Moat for doing champion work at the distribution center, which happens to be her living room during this long pandemic nightmare. When you sign up for a subscription at DesertOracle.com and you use the wrong address and the wrong name because it's 3 a.m. and the edibles just hit hard, well, Meg's the one who walks you towards the light. So have patience. We're not exactly Publishers Clearing House out here, but we sure do appreciate your support on Patreon, by subscribing, by buying the book. Thanks for letting us keep doing this. We'll talk to you next week. Do not forget to go out and see the Great Conjunction on winter solstice. And good night from the Voice of the Desert.
When you heard Ken Lane talking about the Great Conjunction, remember that that was in years past. But our sky events in 2026 are coming right up, with January 3rd being a really nice night for the sky, if the skies are clear. For one thing, on January 3rd, our Earth is at perihelion. And that means it's closest to the sun, about 2 weeks after the December solstice. But the full moon is January 3rd. The full moon in January is also known as the wolf moon. And it's going to be really bright, so hope we have some clear skies for that too. And also, January 3rd through the 4th is the Quadrantids meteor shower. So keep your eyes open for that. You might see up to 80 meteors an hour, though the bright light from the full moon will kind of interfere with that. So we'll see what we get. It's always good to watch. It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, and streaming at kgvm.org. Our next offering from Ken Lane was released January 6, 2023. Here is The Haunted Mountains.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, where the wind howls and the big winter storms keep rolling in. We are in about storm 5 of 12. The tourists have fled. We've got flooding and blizzards and all kinds of excitement. Driving back down the 395 yesterday, the phone kept screeching with those emergency alerts. An avalanche at South Lake Tahoe, maybe. Go the other way. I was somewhere around Lone Pine at the time. The desert in winter in this new year, which used to be represented as a baby. For much of the previous century, a baby wearing a top hat, usually. Now and then, they would show the old year, too, as a very old man about to die. But there's no longer a consensus symbol for the new year. There's no automatic holiday character like the Easter Bunny. No single emoji. I guess nobody cares that much about the new year. But if you want to send some Happy New Year emojis a week late, here are some combinations said to be popular at that time of year. You can do the champagne flutes clicking, then the face with a party hat and party horn, and then the champagne bottle, and the party favor or party popper emoji, the one that looks like a gold party hat sideways. Various other celebratory or dancing-related emojis, like those eerie cat-eared dancing twins, very Overlook Hotel in winter. You would not like to see them standing in the hallway late at night. Or if you are just not feeling the new year, just send the skull emoji. The plain skull, not the skull and crossbones. And only send one so it's bigger all by itself. 10 minutes later, send the hourglass that's almost out of sand. Some popular desert emojis are the scorpion, the cactus, the sort of Monument Valley landscape, a lizard, a camel, a coffin, and an eerie blacked out sun. That's the only one I use. And only in response to strangers who somehow got my phone number. I was looking at the entertainment section of the newspaper, and there was some television industry news that may concern or interest Desert Oracle listeners. Barack and Michelle Obama will be producing a Netflix movie about Barney and Betty Hill. They make Netflix shows now, apparently. The Obamas, I mean. What else is a retired multi-millionaire media couple to do in this world? The story of Betty and Barney Hill is true American folklore, packed with all the elements of a tale that will be with us for a very long time, and has already been around for nearly six decades. It was the middle 1960s when the Hills' strange experience became a national news sensation. The first of the modern abduction stories. The first time Americans were informed that the strange tool of hypnosis could be used to dig up hidden memories of incredible encounters with unknown entities and the mysterious nocturnal lights that always herald such encounters. This is Desert Oracle Radio, and I am your host, Ken Lane. Soundscapes on this program are composed and performed by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Popular imagination today, Betty and Barney Hill were abducted by aliens. But as always, the haunted ground of the Earth itself was the location of their long, strange drive home from a brief holiday at Niagara Falls and up in Montreal in late September of 1961. In the overnight hours of the 19th and 20th of that month, the leaves already changing color in those hours before the autumn equinox. Their journey by rural highway took them south through the Great Granite Mountains and down the glacial valleys of New Hampshire toward their hometown of Portsmouth. A four-hour drive on U.S. Highway 3 with Mount Washington looming to the east, the tallest peak in New Hampshire, way atop the White Mountains. But it took Betty and Barney Hill close to 7 hours to make this 4-hour trip. That missing time would be the focus of an obsession that would, in its way, ruin them both. Because, as John Keel writes in his classic book, The Eighth Tower, those who encounter the mysterious intelligence behind such experiences are generally programmed to self-destruct. Barney Hill would be dead at 46, just 3 years after their story became a tabloid sensation. While Betty Hill would become a UFO fanatic, unable to tell a common airplane or streetlight from the flying saucers that had embedded themselves so completely within her mind that she rarely saw anything else in the night sky for the rest of her life. The White Mountains of New Hampshire are the setting for this story, not outer space, not a binary star system called Zeta Reticuli, as later flying saucer fans would insist. The White Mountains are a place of mystery, a place where the Abnaki people had lived long before the Europeans arrived and had accumulated millennia of regional folklore. Mount Washington itself is a place of such ferocious weather that it holds the global record for highest wind speed. 231 miles per hour on April 12, 1934. The weather observatory there is also very haunted, according to generations of scientists and student interns and visitors who've spent time alone up there. They all refer to it as the presence. And when people admit to seeing it, they see a tall figure in a black cloak, just a fleeting glance, a fleeting vision of this dark shape with a bone-white face. Mostly they feel it. The presence, its presence. Or they hear it walking slowly up the creaking metal stairs, or slamming doors, knocking over supplies and chairs. The friendlier version seems like a cat, a shadowy thing, often glimpsed coming around a corner or from down a dark corridor. Dr. Peter Crane, the observatory's curator and a resident of the White Mountains for more than 3 decades, says this about the ghost cat. I quote from the Sportsman's Guide. There are those who seem to have a belief that some of those spirits or tragic victims remain and resurface. For generations, cats have been kept by those who winter on Mount Washington, just as there are human spirits, there are feline spirits. Dr. Crane is skeptical of the presence, but holding a doctoral degree in folklore and folklife from the University of Pennsylvania, he is well acquainted with the centuries of strange tales connected with these haunted mountains. There's an old stone house up there, too. The Tip Top House is called. Supposedly the oldest mountaintop hotel in America. Too many ghosts to count, reported one spooked visitor. I will not be going back into it. Over in the Wiley Range, people have reported every kind of strange and spooky occurrence, like the solo hiker who knows the area well and hurried up the mountain just before sunset, and then found herself alone in the dark with a strange presence. But this one with the shrill, mocking laughter of a child. The whole Wiley family was killed in a landslide there back in 1825. Historical fact. And then there's Crawford Trail, the oldest maintained hiking trail in America, and one with a couple of very dangerous sections, where more than 200 hikers have died. Lucy Crawford herself has been seen in typical 19th century dress. And then she just disappears. Ethan Crawford and a group of woodsmen claim they encountered something awful and sinister near Mount Eisenhower. They too called it the Presence. There are other spirits reported, including two who hiked these mountains in recent times and are known by name. Mizpah Spring Hut is home to the ghost of 16-year-old Betsy Roberts of Newton, Massachusetts, who drowned in the basement of this mountain lodging during a terrible flood in 1971. No matter how dry the season, campers report the sound of heavy rain and dripping water while they try to sleep. And a camping hut called Lake of the Clouds, serving through hikers in the Presidential Range, Mount Eisenhower being one of these peaks, is notorious for ongoing hauntings. The ghost of Ben Campbell, for example, crawls into the bunk with women hikers should they choose the last bunk room on the right. It is reported to be an affectionate encounter, remembered in the morning by the dreamer. Ben Campbell loved these trails and peaks, and after his death in Scotland on another perilous hike, his boots were nailed to the wall of the hiker's hut, where his spirit lingers still. There are whole books filled with such tales, and some of this information comes from Hauntings of the White Mountains by New Hampshire hiker and historian Janice McKerney. A worthwhile read for those who wander New Hampshire or would like to. If you were rambling these rugged trails, pay special reverence at Mount Shakora, named for the chief whose happy life here was forever changed by the arrival of the uninvited European settlers. Because those who pay their respects to Chief Shakora say that they too feel a powerful presence. So Barney Hill is driving southbound on US 3, and Betty Hill's riding shotgun on this September night, just before the equinox in the year of 1961. And they've got their little dog, too. They seem to be a lovely couple, very happy together. They are a unique couple, too, because Barney is a black man, and Betty is a white woman. And this was extremely rare in the 1950s when they married, and was still very rare in 1961. At that time, New Hampshire and neighboring Vermont were two of the only states that did not have anti-interracial marriage laws on the books at some point in the history of the United States. In the American South, those laws persisted until 1967, when they were thrown out by the U.S. Supreme Court, but Alabama did not remove its law from the books until it was rejected officially by voters in the year 2000. And it only became federal law that interracial and same-sex marriage was protected in this land of the free on November 29 of 2022, or 61 years after our story takes place. When the Hills were returning from that archetypal lover's resort, Niagara Falls. Barney was a postman, a good government job. Betty was a social worker. They were, like many progressive people in the 1960s, active members of their local Unitarian church, active members of the NAACP, and Barney Hill was a member of the Portsmouth Board of the United States Commission on Civil Rights. A happy couple living a good life in a time of American progress and American plenty. About 10:30, driving just south of Lancaster on US 3, something caught their eye. One of those lights that grabs your attention and then starts pulsing and moving, the kind of thing that gets Betty and Barney Hill talking about it, wondering, speculating, and pretty soon they're obsessed with it. By now they've pulled over to a scenic spot with picnic tables on the south side of Twin Mountain. Let the dog out, etc. Get some fresh air. And look at this strange light in the sky, moving up, moving down. And now they're driving down Franconia Notch, and they watch the brilliant object appear behind New Hampshire's famous Old Man of the Mountain. The face in the rock that remains the state emblem, even though it collapsed 20 years ago. Well, the UFO appeared again, from behind the haunted old face. And it was not just a weird light now, it was a rounded craft more than 40 feet wide, all lit up. And then right by the Indian Head Resort alongside Highway 3 today, it came out of the sky and right at their car, hovering over the two-lane before them. The classic scene we all know in our hearts today, but this was the one that created the template. Barney, with his pistol in hand, stopped in the roadway and got out, seeing what he thought might be people up there behind the craft's now apparent windows. Those people wore black uniforms and black caps. One of them looked down at Barney Hill, looked right at him in the face, and telepathically told him to stay right there. Keep looking up. The bottom of the craft had something like bat wings, and those sinister, hazy red lights still reported on Black Triangle sightings today. Barney got back in the car, telling his wife, "They're going to capture us." He sped off while Betty watched the dark skies above. Then the buzzing began, the buzzing and the clicking and the banging from what sounded like the trunk of their car. Both Hills felt a tingling sensation, like an arm or a leg falling asleep, but it overtook them completely, and they lost consciousness. When they both became aware again, the car was some 35 miles south of Indian Head. Both vaguely remembered a roadblock. Barney and Betty Hill remembered that roadblock, and they remembered a brilliant light dropping down to ground level, and then maybe Barney turned off the road, maybe down a dirt road into the forest. Neither of them could ever locate the spot where this happened. Nothing quite matched up. And they just felt weird, anxious, unable to quit thinking about it. A month later, Barney Hill reported the incident to NICAP, the well-known National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. Well, that was the beginning of a very different story. Presumably the one to be told by the Obama's Netflix movie called The White Mountains. Which is a good sign, I think, because it shows they intend to pay some attention to the place, to the haunted land. Yeah, a hypnotist eventually got Barney Hill to see space monsters and got Betty Hill to see UFOs everywhere all the time. But the real event, or at least the real event as the Hills originally perceived it, on that lonesome road through a granite gorge, that is the true story of Betty and Barney Hill. The story that provided us with all the parameters of the flying saucer landing. Lonesome road, wilderness, a mesmerizing light that becomes an apparent structured craft that speaks to us telepathically, that alters our perception of time and space, that leaves us back in our cars driving down the two lane, very much unsure of what occurred in the meantime. 62 years ago, in September of 1961, the month of what was then the worst passenger plane air disaster, all 78 dead, TWA Flight 529 in pieces in a cornfield not long after departing Chicago's Midway Airport. The same month when Richard Nixon made a hole-in-one at the Bel Air Country Club, what he proudly called the greatest thrill of my life. And only one other president ever got a hole-in-one, Gerald Ford, 16 years later, after replacing Nixon as president. Good night from the Voice of the Desert.
Our background audio today has been Cliff Rose from Red, Blue, Black, Silver's 2024 Cliff Rose Collection. Thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver and to Ken Lane for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to my fellow volunteers and the supporters and underwriters of KGVM. And to you. This program broadcasts on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are archived for you on the kgvm.org website. Pray for more snow. Watch the skies. Keep doing good things. Stay well and sweet dreams. I'll see you next week.